KFAX 1070 News Radio.
That's what I want to hear.
Money 101.
I'm Bob McCormick. Welcome. Boy, what a week. It's only Tuesday. Man, in this business, things move fast. Thank you for being with us on the program about money. And, of course, we touch on other issues as we did yesterday with the Rutgers IMUS controversy. Dr. Harry Edwards will be here after 11 o'clock. Right now, I'd like to introduce someone who's been on the program on the phone before, and I got a chance to meet him in person, a former hostage negotiator, SWAT member, psychological profiler with the FBI, FBI defensive tactics instructor, as well as an interrogation instructor and a homicide investigation instructor. And then most recently, also is the polygraph unit chief of the FBI, Jack Tremarco. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Tremarco. I'd love to talk to you about this stuff because it came up on a number of our programs in the workplace and whether or not you could give a polygraph to an employee. Let's start off with what the law in California is. First off, regarding the private sector, and that is at your place of employment in the private sector, you can't be you cannot be ordered to take a polygraph test, can you?
No, actually, Bob, a polygraph in any arena has to be a voluntary procedure. And especially in the workforce, we've got, since 1988, the Employee Polygraph Protection Act, which is a very strict Department of Labor law, which basically says you can't polygraph an employee for any reason other than a loss to the corporation. And, of course, if there is that loss documented, then you have to adhere to the demands of the law.
Okay, now, so it can be someone suspected of being involved in that loss.
Right, and that level of suspicion is not necessarily probable cause, which, of course, we in law enforcement use for an arrest. Mm-hmm. But a lesser degree, which is known as reasonable belief. So if there's reasonable belief that that employee had access to the property that was stolen, then they can be asked to take a polygraph in connection with that reasonable belief.
That sounds like in the area.
In the area.
Access to the computer or the place where the hard property was, the merchandise was.
Well, let me say this. If they don't have access to it, they're not going to be asked to take a polygraph.
They're not going to be asked to take a bit. And
by the way, access in addition to reasonable belief.
And let's get to the point here where we delineate because, you know, there's the white collar crime, the embezzlers, the people have access to thousands or maybe millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And then there's the low-level employee. And as we know, insider theft is one of the biggest problems that employers have. So how petty can the theft be?
Well, it could be petty to any level. The law reads a loss to the corporation. Now, if it's articulated, and it must be specific loss. It can't be an anticipated loss or a generalized loss. It must be specific. And if it is, then that person can be asked to take a polygraph test. And I should say that we're not talking about the bank president taking his Rolex off, laying it on the desk, going to the restroom, coming back, and it's missing, and the only person that had access to it was his secretary. That would not be a loss to the corporation. That would be a loss to the bank president, and therefore no polygraph could be asked.
In the public sector, we know in law enforcement the polygraph is quite common. What about civil servants for the state of California?
Civil servants are the exception to the Employee Polygraph Protection Act. In other words, if you want to become an LAPD police officer or even employee, you'll be asked to take a polygraph if that's the policy of that particular department. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to be, but you may be by law.
You can be asked, you're saying, but you don't necessarily have to as a condition of employment?
No, you can be asked, and if you say no, then you look for another job.
You're out. Okay.
Right, and that's made quite clear.
Okay, all right. Now, when you are administering, are all polygraphs created equal? For example, the one that I saw being given to the actor Matt Damon in The Good Shepherd, the CIA polygraph, which I wasn't surprised to see him have to take a polygraph test. I'm sure they give them quite frequently. FBI, no surprise there. Is it the same machine, for example, at LAPD where the fire department, as it would be the FBI, the CIA, or these have various levels of technicalities?
No, actually, the technology is quite constant. There's analog polygraphs, which have been around for years, and the wave of the future is the computerized polygraph. And there's only three or four manufacturers out there. And so based on the nuances and the preferences of the federal agency, or perhaps who gets the best deal in a package deal, then they're going to go with those polygraphs. But right now, there's no evidence to prove that a computerized polygraph measures deception or truth any better than an analog. It does have its pluses, however, and one is word processing and a probability of deception.
Now, you can, and I want to talk about this as we continue, but you've able to develop and take what you've gotten from the lie detector test and incorporate it into an interrogation technique.
Yes.
Where there is no technology whatsoever, no machinery involved. I want to ask about that when we continue on Money 101. And what has been the history, the experience of people who have been polygraphed? How accurate are they? All that and more with Jack Tremarco, retired chief of the FBI polygraph unit in Los Angeles. A lot of research has found that lying can cause physical changes in the brain. A Temple University radiologist identified 14 regions of the brain that get active when you lie. Only 7 regions apparently light up when you're telling the truth. Now, Americans have been obsessed with polygraph machines, and we've seen them, of course, on television shows. In fact, my guest was recently on Dr. Phil. We mentioned the law enforcement agencies that routinely polygraph the employees. What does it measure? It measures breathing, Jack, pulse, perspiration. What are the indicators of truth?
Right, Bob. What I monitor during a polygraph examination is the respiratory function, sweat gland activity, and cardio function. We know that when a person tells a lie, their breathing changes in a predictable way. We know that their sweat glands innervate, and we know that their cardio changes. Perhaps the blood pressure will go up and come back down in a timely manner. So what I'm looking for, Bob, is consistent, significant physiological reaction. I get significant by being the expert and being very subjective about that. What is truth or deception? And the other thing, of course, is consistency, which can only be gotten through repetition. And so I ask the questions, as all polygraph examiners do or should, 2, 3, maybe even 4 times.
All right, I've got to ask you about how those questions differ from what you would ask in the interrogation room, or sweating somebody in the box, as they would say. Now, I know you're not using the Jack Bauer techniques, and you're not probably touching the person or her, interfering with them in any way. But are the questions, can you actually sit across the table from someone with what you've learned down through, and how many, 25 years, 30? How many years you've been? Can you tell whether someone is telling the truth by observing their mannerisms?
Sometimes, Bob. That rule is the better you know the person, the more likely you'll know when they're not telling you the truth. For example, moms are the best polygraph examiners in the world because they know little Johnny 24 hours a day. And when mom tells Johnny, don't take a cookie before dinner, and she walks into the kitchen and the cookie jar has the top off of it and there's crumbs on the counter and crumbs, in fact, on little Johnny's mouth. And she says, Johnny, did you take a cookie? And he goes into the fetal position and looks down and lowers his voice and says, no, Mommy. Well, Mom knows immediately that Johnny did take the cookie. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the tragedy is that as we get older, we learn to lie better.
Ask the mom to come along with the suspect in every case?
That would be the ideal, Bob.
All right. Accuracy. They've come under criticism, the polygraphs have, for the accuracy, and they're not admitted in court, right? Although you commit as evidence, but you can admit the results.
Well, one of the old wives' tales is that polygraph is not admissible as evidence across the board, when in fact, on a federal level, as a result of a Daubert hearing, the federal judge has the authority, and it's up to him whether that polygraph will go forward as evidence. Now, on the state level, in the state of California, it will never be admissible as evidence unless it's stipulated to by both sides.
How can then someone in the back to the private sector, what I asked you at the beginning, and someone's been embezzling in our scenario here, and the polygraph, they flunk the polygraph and they terminate the person, and what are their remedies at that point?
Can't do it.
You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't.
If you take the polygraph, part of that Employee Polygraph Protection Act states quite strongly that no adverse action can be taken against the employee who chooses not to take the polygraph or who takes it and fails it.
Even forgot to ask you that question. All right, so you can't terminate if they fail if they refuse to take it, and you really can't terminate them if they take it and they fail the polygraph.
So the next question is then why even ask them to do it?
Yes.
And of course, excuse me, that's where the confession comes in. If that polygraph examiner is good at what he does, then he should be able to get that person to tell him the truth.
Well, as a matter of fact, that's the whole idea, and it's a pretty high rate of confession, right, when you get people in there.
Well, it depends. It depends on who your polygraph examiner is. And, Bob, you know, there is a difference between a private sector polygraph and a law enforcement polygraph.
I would think there would be. We'll find out more about that. And Jack Tremarco, retired chief of the FBI Polygraph Unit, is our guest. More on interrogation techniques and interview techniques. How can some of the principles, if at all, be applied to the workplace? We'll find out. Is the guy on the other end of the phone telling the truth? Are there ways to measure whether someone has stress in their voice and may be lying to you? For example, maybe even your spouse. Jack Tremarco is with us, retired chief of the FBI Polygraph Unit. Years in law enforcement with the FBI in particular as a hostage negotiator, SWAT member, and psychological profiler. And we are talking about the polygraphs. How can you tell when someone is lying with the technology or without, and is it possible? Jack, I want to introduce you to Megan Reyes, who's been with KNX for many years.
Hi, Megan. Listen to you every day.
Hi, thank you.
Megan wanted to be a police officer. It was about a year and a half ago, 2 years?
About a year and a half ago, I applied for LAPD.
And what happened? They asked you to...
Part of the hiring process for LAPD is you have to take a polygraph. And you do the polygraph before they conduct a background. So basically, the polygraph is determining whether you're going to go into background. And a decision of that magnitude, I had issues with that. And when I did the polygraph, I failed it. Mm. And everything that I told them was the truth. And the issues and the areas of deception that they showed was in violent crime. And violent crime is what they told me was murder, robbery, rape, burglary. Mm. I was accused of deception in that area, drug usage, and anybody who knows me, I've never done marijuana, but according to the polygraph, they accused me of dealing drugs, being a drug dealer. I was accused flat out there of dealing drugs because of the levels, flat out being a drug dealer, and areas of deception in employee theft.
Now, can I ask you about what the machine looked like? Where do they put the wires, and how would that work? And then, Jack, you comment on this.
They got wires all over you. I mean, they've got wires on the chest. They got wires to monitor your heart, heart rate, your breathing. They've got monitors to put on your hands to monitor your pulse. I mean, everything. And you have to sit in the chair, and you can't move.
Right.
And you just answer yes or no. And you can't breathe any different way because the machine
detects
that.
They tell you that absolutely still.
The direction to the examinee is to try not to move and to breathe normally, whatever normal is for you.
Jack, I've got to get your response to this and into the way in which the questions seem to be posed to her to try to elicit this information. Also, why in the world can't, you know, with the computers we have, you know, find out whether there's, for example, anything other than a squeaky clean record? Jack Tremarco has worked on the Unabomber case, the first World Trade Center bombing, Whitewater, other high-profile cases, and is a board member of the California Association of Polygraph Examiners and the chairman of the Ethics Committee. Megan Reyes, who's the traffic anchor extraordinaire here on KNX, is just described how her attempt to be able to become an L.A. police officer was thwarted by a polygraph test. And you're going to ask her, Jack, tell me about what would you ask Megan about this test that we could make some judgments or assessments?
Well, first of all, I can speak in probabilities because I don't know the Los Angeles Police Department protocol for polygraph or for their backgrounds, which comes before which. But I think there are some things that I can assume correctly, and that would be that there would be two corrugated tubes Oftentimes, examinees say wires all over the place. Mm. Well, actually, there's two corrugated tubes, one for the upper, it's called the upper pneumograph, and the lower pneumograph, which is going to measure changes in breathing. Two finger plates, which will go either on the left hand or the right hand, which will monitor sweat gland activity as those sweat glands saturate and then evaporate. Mm-hmm. So that pen will be going up and down, showing that there is some sweat gland activity. And lastly is the blood pressure cuff, mm-hmm. which will go on right. the opposite arm of where the finger plates was placed. That's inflated, and it's inflated quite snugly. And then the asking of the question should take between 2 and 3 minutes.
How many questions? Do you have any idea how many questions you were asked, Megan?
They probably asked about 8 questions, just and eight. They did it 3 separate times.
Right, so, and that's yeah. for consistency.
They do the last three times. How could someone like this have such a horrible outcome of the test and then not get any further? They wouldn't do the background check after that?
No, with LAPD, and again, I don't agree with it, but I respect their policy. This is their hiring standards, and at least when I went through their processing, you need to pass the polygraph in order to go to a background. And my argument was, listen, do the background. Everything that I disclosed in this polygraph has been the truth. So do the background, and that will support it with conclusion, and you will see that everything that I have disclosed is the truth. I am not a drug dealer. I have not committed a violent crime, and I do not steal from my employer. Do the background, but unfortunately, I was disqualified.
Mm-hmm. Jack, how much does it cost to administer a polygraph? What is the cost on that?
Well, it's free if you're an applicant
for
the police department.
No, I mean the cost of the city to do this, to go this process, because she's raising an issue of the process that they use. Rather than just use the computer and do a background check and go through the public records, the DMV and the law enforcement records.
Well, fiscally, I would think that this is a good policy.
To have the polygraph
first. Do the polygraph first. However, from a commonsensical point of view, I, as the FBI does, they do the background first, and if you pass the background, then you go to the polygraph.
I think it's a cost saving factor.
Well, but how can we find what she needs to do? What is her recourse right now?
Well, most police agencies offer a retest, an appeal process. Mm-hmm. And
did you go through the appeal process?
I did a retest, and same results. They said that there was deception in the same three areas: violent crime, drug usage, and employee theft.
And that exam should have been given by a different polygraph examiner.
Yes, it was by a different polygraph examiner. And so at that point, you're left with, okay, you can go ahead and appeal it, and a panel board will go ahead and make this decision whether or not you're going to continue, and then you get the take the chance of being disqualified, which, as you know, if you want to get into law enforcement, you don't want a disqualification on your background. So in a sense, I was forced to withdraw, but I'm not eligible to reapply with LAPD until 2008.
You know what, Megan? I know you got to get back to your job, but we're going to have to call LAPD and on a show here soon in the next couple of days, get their response to this. We'll continue on Money 101 with Jack Tremarco on the polygraph. What if percentage of them are inaccurate, Jack? Give me a ballpark.
Well, it depends on the examiner. All examiners, Bob, are not created equal.
But is there a ballpark?
There is a ballpark.
What would that be?
With the best qualified examiners, about 93%.
Accuracy.
Yes.
KNX 1070, Money 101. I'm Bob McCormick. A caller or two have said that they had a similar experience with the LAPD polygraph process. We are going to be contacting them. Jack Tremarco, a retired chief of the FBI polygraph unit, of course, can't speak for the LAPD. When it comes to the FBI, obviously, there's a recruitment campaign going on, and they want more agents and they want more diversity in the FBI. How important is the polygraph in the hiring process? Is it a make or break thing?
It is a make or break
thing.
It is. However, it's the last stage of the application process, so that if a person passes their polygraph, they get on a plane and go to Quantico.
So the background checks are done in advance of any polygraph test. And you mentioned that they're not all created equally. I mean, the polygraph depends on how good the examiner is, what the questions are, how they're framed. I had another caller who said he was charged with a crime. His private attorney had him take a polygraph, which he passed. The DA, of course, wanted to run their own polygraph. Now, according to his story, that they really sweated him before the polygraph exam. I mean, they really bore down on him, and he felt maybe that then the results were affected.
Well, one of the rules, Bob, is that you cannot interrogate and then polygraph.
Can't do that, okay.
No, that sensitizes the person to the relevant issue. And so what we need to know is, and what people need to know is, that there's a lot of fraud out there. There are a lot of people who claim to be polygraph examiners who aren't, who are taking advantage of people who need help. They need to get to the truth. Yeah. And it doesn't mean a stack of beans if you've got a great website and it plays bells and whistles. It really matters who your examiner is. In other words, the DA is going to ask when that defense attorney says, who's the polygraph examiner that passed your client? And if that's someone who is known as a prostitute in the business, then it's going to fall on deaf ears.
All right. Since we have, you call them the question, sometimes the results of the polygraph, given the circumstances, the way in which it's administered, the questions, then how in the world, what kind of accuracy can you get in a one-on-one situation? When you're sweating somebody in the box as a policeman, or you're trying to get to the truth of someone, maybe as a manager trying to resolve a dispute between some employees who've been accusing each other, or one's accusing one of something, how do you get to the truth?
Well, Bob, there's a protocol. There's three parts to a polygraph test. There's the pretest, which is conversation and explanation, which may vary from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And then the running of the charts, and then the examiner coming to a conclusion or not.
Yeah.
The three possibilities are deceptive to the relevant issue, non-deceptive to the relevant issue, or inconclusive, or as we now call it in 2007, no opinion.
Okay, your opinion. The voice meters that we've seen, that where someone assesses whether someone's telling the truth by the way their voice registers on a meter on a telephone call or in an interview room. What's the accuracy, or is that totally bogus?
The Department of Defense Polygraph Institute, now known as the Defense Academy for Credibility Assessment, did countless studies on voice stress.
No.
And
yes or no?
We wanted to use it next to our polygraphs.
Yeah.
It's like flipping a coin. Go to Radio Shack, or better yet, go to Toys R Us and buy something.
There's your price.
And save your money.
There's your price. All right. More with Jack on Money 101 on KNX 1070. Well, we've seen our share of CSI and Law and Order episodes. How realistic are these interrogation techniques? You know the scenario. Horatio already has it all figured out. So, walks in quietly. Quietly addresses the brazen criminal. Takes his sunglasses off, right? Looks away, then looks at him. The suspect slouches in his chair. And he tells the suspect they've already found his fingerprints inside the victim's house. His DNA was with the body. Says he knows the suspect was involved in the crime. Of course, the guy cracks. But is that really what goes on in the interrogation room? How often, Jack DeMarco, does elicit a confession in the interrogation?
Well, in my experience, Bob, 4 out of 5 times.
Really?
When we
wow.
come to a deceptive result, and I know that that person is the person who robbed the bank, then 80% of the time I would get a confession.
Now, you've worked on the Unabomber case, the World Trade Center. What would you say is your most memorable case?
Well, my most important case, as I always say, is my next case. However, the one that always gets me emotional would be the murder of Markeisha Candler. She was a little 5-year-old African-American girl who was missing from the Fox Hills Mall, we were told, by her grandmother and her aunt. And so for a week, Culver City Police Department scoured the mall area and the neighborhood surrounding it, and then asked for FBI assistance in the case because they wanted some out-of-state leads covered. And the FBI policy is, whenever we have a missing child, we polygraph the mother and the father, the last person to have been with the child, and the person who reports the disappearance to the police.
Really? Okay.
35% of the time, everything stops right there.
Because it's one of those.
It's one of those.
And that was the case.
And that was the case. I polygraphed the grandmother. I asked her, are you responsible for the disappearance of Markeisha? She said no, and I explained responsibility. I explained that I wasn't talking about holding her hand or paying closer attention to her at the mall. I explained that I meant the reason she's not with us here tonight because of something you know or something you did. And she said, I'm glad you clear that up for me. I can answer that question no. And then she failed the test. And then about an hour later, she ended up telling me that little Markeisha was in heaven with the angels and, in fact, had never been to the mall, died in the bathtub at home.
All right. Yeah. So a lot of this is psychological profiling.
Well, a lot of this is psychological. It's the psychology.
The profiling, you guys like that word too much.
Well, I do like profiling, but psychologically speaking, the guilty person has to understand that I know the truth, and they have to believe that by telling me the truth, it's going to better their lot. In other words, no one's going to admit to something if they think it's going to make things worse.
Nobody, yes. In terms of the technology, where it's going, what do you see coming down? Do you see where the lie detector, given that we have seen such advances in computer sciences, you would think that the technology would have, but have polygraphs improved in the last few years? Or?
Oh, sure they have, Bob. They're, as I said earlier, computerized polygraphs are the wave of the future. They have word processing capability. They have probability of deception capability. However, that software is not perfected yet. And so a polygraph examiner has to rely on reading the charts himself. And then if he's a good polygraph examiner, he has another examiner do a blind analysis of what he's done, and hopefully the two experts come to the same conclusion.
But it's still a 93% accuracy, which means for 7%, and Megan Reyes apparently fell into that 7%. No rhyme or reason to it.
Right.
They're just not going to be able to pass. Jack Tramarco, retired chief of the FBI Polygraph Unit in L.A., has worked on a lot of Los Angeles cases. How are there some people who can fool the polygraph machine? And what? By the way, what does it take to do that? Because you're talking about, you know, a set of skills here we're talking about. Huh?
Well, Bob, it goes back to the polygraph examiner. Certainly, if you've been a federal polygraph examiner, then it's going to be a tough road to hoe if you're going to be trying to fool the polygraph examiner. Now, there's
Are you saying there's a difference between the examiner and the machine, you're saying?
I'm saying that the machine is the constant in that room.
Okay.
That it's almost like trying to beat the electrocardiogram if you try to beat the polygraph instrument. And so you go to the examiner, and that's the weak link. As I said, all examiners are not created equal. Some are complete frauds. Some are very honest. Some aren't as good technicians as they should be. But if they're a member of a professional organization, such as American Polygraph Association, American Association of Police Polygraphists, or a California Association of Polygraph Examiners, that's a good start. That shows that a professional organization has accepted them based on their merits. Now, there are two types of people that try to interfere with the test: the people who did it and the people who didn't do it. If the person who didn't do it...
A lot of confessions by people that didn't do it.
If the person who didn't do it tries to interfere with the testing process, in other words, tries to help the examiner come to the right conclusion because it's so important. If he's gone to a website, all he's going to do is mess things up. If he didn't do it, he should just trust in the examiner. And if he did do it, he probably shouldn't take a polygraph test. However, that's an interesting psychology. People do take polygraph tests because they're desperate. The bank robber who is looking at 20 years, he'll come to me through his attorney to take my polygraph, because if he passes, he knows my reputation is going to mean a lot with the United States attorney, and perhaps he won't go to jail.
But about the people who confess to crimes they don't commit, this happens all the time.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't happen all the time.
No, in my experience, absent psychopathy or police misconduct, people, normal people, don't confess to things they didn't do.
So they don't even get as far
two
as
exceptions.
To the polygraph.
Yeah, the very, very young and the very, very old.
Okay.
Those people are susceptible to interrogation.
Jack Tramarco, interesting conversation. We've got to have you on again. Of course, my boss wants you to polygraph me. How much is it going to cost us, by the way?
That's for free.
Really?
Oh,
now you got me scared.
You're much too easy, Bob.
All right.
Bob McCormick on KNX 1070 News Radio.